Okay, that hurts.
How does Whitey do that for 4 hours?
You've not been to a happy hardcore show. It's ridiculous.
Oh.
Also, drugs. Nice. This is episode 169 of Audio Face, an irreverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I am Sean.
This is actually a special episode of Audio Face, not a special bonus episode, but it's a numbered episode, but it's the last proper one of the year. This is a really exciting one because Audio Face real ones and fans will know that this is when we do our annual court packing episode, fourth annual.
It's a thing.
Fourth annual court packing episode.
I just can't wait till it's six because I could be the Joker and be like, six.
Yeah, so with the fourth annual court packing episode, this is when we mention any album that we heard throughout the year that we maybe didn't get to devote an entire episode or time on the episode to, and so we can mention it and qualify for possible consideration in the upcoming Audio Face Awards. Should be very exciting. Also, in addition to that, which is also just like a major music recommendation segment near the end of the show, we've got a lot of great music news, a lot of really interesting things to talk about. We're really lean on it because we've got a lot to talk about, but the albums this week, Man on the Moon 3 by Kid Cudi.
Man on the Moon.
Long time coming. Yes. Nightmare Vacation by Rico Nasty, first proper album effort. And a little less long time coming considering the band, but The Avalanches, We Will Always Love You, their third album. We did an Avalanches bonus episode as our episode last week with Oliver. It was really good. We got to break down music. It was really fun, even to edit. It was actually really fun, so check that out if you haven't already, because that is cool. But first, we have got some singles, because we do that from time to time. It's actually not often, but you know, let's wrap out the end of the year with some nice things. And we have first a really cool collaboration between Thom Yorke Quartet and there was another
Burial.
Burial. And it's like a double A side single, Her Revolution and His Rope. Marxist Thom Yorke again, as always. What do you think is the resident, irreverent, elephant Thom Yorke fan on the podcast?
I like it. I mean, it's really space echoey, like the first one. Her Revolution is like kind of echoey and like, they've done stuff before a long time ago, Quartet and Thom Yorke. I mean, it's a little bit similar to that, but a little bit more dark and spacey. Then His Rope is a bit more experimental.
Still awake in the morning mist. Grab me some grace. Grab me some grace. You don't have to worry.
It's fun. It's different if you like kind of that style of really different, almost like Uncle, if you know who Uncle is. We did a review of their album last year, I believe. Kind of similar to that style of really dark, space echoey, a little bit of experimental into it. And his voice is always great for that because you can always chop up and do a lot of different stuff with it. But it was good. I always like it.
So. Yeah, I liked His Rope a little bit more just because
of the deeper
drum parts of it. I think it really kind of brought it together. But very nice, wonderful thing to grace us this holiday. Just like 100 Gex has, they've kind of become a blowout sensation from their album last year.
Yes.
1000 Gex and the Tree of Clues. Very experimental, kind of bringing hyperpop to a new level kind of thing. And now you have a Christmas song, which is like this really nice hybrid of a like happy hardcore EDM song and like a punk track. It's pretty wild. It's very like happy for what they do.
It's intensely happy and crazy, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
It's two minutes of just like, insert headbanginess here.
Yes. Headbanging, silliness, awesomeness, all of that stuff. Yes, those are the singles we're about to go in. We just did a new episode of Power Report. Check that out. That was really fun with Sean and Caesar and Bam from We Made It podcast. We talked about using an Xbox controller to conduct assassinations. We talked about vaccines and whether or not Bam is an anti-vaxxer. We talked about a lot of different fun things, including some world news stories.
See shilling out for Bolsonaro.
Yes, a lot of fun things. And so that's cool. Make sure to check that out. Audio Face Awards, as we said, will be coming in, you know, I probably won't release it exactly on that Monday just because it takes a long time to shoot it and then edit it and then make all the things. So it'll be a production. It's usually out Christmas week, no later than that. That should be good. Oh, what's this? I have just signed on to do a weekly Twitch stream show. It's branded for me. It's called Thank Dan It's Friday for SourceStream. It's going to be really interesting. I am excited to do it. I'm going to have guests on there. I'm going to kind of just do like a week of like what the news was as you head into your weekend. Maybe I'll get some music on there because it will be New Music Friday. Get to do some brand synergy there. But yeah, check out my... I'll post more about details as I get them, as like where folks can watch it. It's going to be on Twitch most likely. But yeah, just follow me on Twitter at Dan from the Web and Instagram at Dan from the Internet for that. And of course, AudioFace has social media stuff as well at AudioFacePod at Twitter and Instagram. It's going to be an exciting new year. I haven't taken a look at the all the next year's calendar like I usually do at this time of year because I'm drowning in music, honestly. I'm herd dog. Don't ask me if I'm all right.
There's a lot of music. A lot of music that came out this past week where I was like, Jesus Christ, chill.
No, it's literally everyone's just like dump trucking their end of year shit. And there's probably going to be more that we can't do because this is the cutoff episode. And thank you for reaching out on AudioFacePod and Twitter and Instagram for sending us your... submissions for the Audience Face Awards. We'll be having that soon. And actually, I can sort of see right now it's a blowout. it's a fucking blowout as for what's going to win for that one. Anyways, we did have a lot of albums this week. We had Aminé and Taylor Swift both add onto their earlier albums from this year. Both of those albums were very great. Aminé's Compensating and Taylor Swift's Folklore. Taylor Swift's Folklore, maybe not necessarily as great as Compensating. Mm. Not Compensating, but Limbo.
Limbo
is the name of the album, but Compensating is the lead single that I very much enjoy. And the Taylor Swift Folklore album, we actually ended up liking a lot more than we expected to like Taylor Swift.
I know her album that just came out, it's a bit slower and it's way darker. way darker. I was like, okay, it's interesting. I listened to a little bit of it just to see if it was like more of a continuation or a little bit different. It's still kind of like the same style, but slowed down a bit and way more like deep introspective. And a lot of it's like Radiohead level depressing. I'm like, all right, go chill.
Interesting. I may actually want to check that out.
It is
kind
interesting.
Of like a side of Taylor Swift I've always wanted to see that she doesn't really express in albums, but she
definitely
said that
does. Like the song, the song Happiness is definitely not happy.
Be a beautiful fool who takes my spot next to you. Didn't mean that. Sorry, I can't see facts through all of my fury. You haven't met the new me yet. There'll be happiness after me, but there was happiness because of me.
Oh, that's funny. Like there are. It's funny. So you got to listen to a little bit of the Taylor Swift one. I got to listen to a little bit of the Limbo bonus. And it's a very kind of typical deluxe album that we've seen this year where you're adding the deluxe songs to the top. And then at the bottom is just like the regular album. The deluxe songs are pretty nice. There's a couple with, there's one called, I mean, just the names are really funny. I think my favorite is the beginning one, Mrs. Clean. It just like uses a lot of Aminé's good wordplay and styling and good production, which he does a lot of his own.
Yeah.
And really brings it together and highlights the album itself. But we don't have time to review it this week.
That's our review.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm much happier talking about everything else. And generally, what did Matty Healy say?
Double albums are terrible for fans.
And then what did he do?
Made a fucking double album. Thanks, Maddie. Fucking Healy.
We report, you decide.
Yeah, I love you. I love you, Maddie, but I'm going to give you shit for that for a very long time. So speaking of Maddie Healy, his significant other, FKA Twigs, she's suing Shia LaBeouf over alleged sexual assault and relentless abuse.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
There's a lot
pretty
there.
Fucking brutal.
FKA Twigs, we talked about, like, in her own right for being, like, a really, like, awesome, phenomenal position.
Yeah.
I believe her album Magdalene, or...
Yes. Yeah. The one with the one album cover that still scares me to this day.
Yes.
That I actually did really enjoy.
It was one of the better albums that came out last year.
Yeah, it was a fantastic album last year.
But yeah, I'm just reading from a CBS report. She's suing actor Shia LaBeouf from the movies. Accusing him of sexual battery, assault, and relentless abuse. The 32-year-old British singer, whose real name is Tahila Debrett Barnett, dated LaBeouf for just under a year between 2018 and 2019.
Mm-hmm.
According to the lawsuit, LaBeouf drove Barnett to a spa Valentine's Day in 2019. You read this part. It's pretty bad.
When he was, like, driving, like, insanely fast and, like, going through, and she's like, bruh, chill.
Yeah. There's going to be probably some graphic stuff coming up, just for the record. LaBeouf, anyway, this is, I think, before that, like, LaBeouf was towering over her at a certain point in Valentine's Day, violently squeezing her body and arms against her will. The suit claims LaBeouf began strangling her and whispering, "If you don't stop, you're going to lose me."
Whoa.
He threatened to crash the car. That's the thing unless she professed her internal love for him.
That's some incel shit right there.
I've been watching a lot of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia recently, and there's the dentist system, but this is way worse.
Oh, this is right. The dentist system. D E. This is the dentist system on drugs.
Yeah.
It's really sad to hear. I know, because I saw Maddie post something like supporting FKA Twigs and stuff. I'm like, oh, what happened? And I saw the article. I was like, whoa, what the hell?
A lot happened.
Like, Jesus Christ, I hate males so much.
Yeah. Let's see. LaBeouf is, of course, kind of like saying that these allegations aren't true. There were similar things. There's a woman named Carolyn Faux, who he also dated back in 2010, 2011, who was complaining about very similar things. So you see a pattern of abuse. Yeah. You see, like, the cycles of denial. I think the phrase, "many of these allegations are not true," is... is one way to start your battle.
Guilty!
He said he wanted the women to have the opportunity to air their statements publicly and accept accountability for those things I have done. So it's like conceding some fault, but, like, again, it's not... This is some really, like, fucking horrible stuff here.
Yeah, bro. You need to pay your dues and go drop the soap.
Yeah, if those are your dreams, don't let those dreams be dreams, please.
And, all right. Moving on to first album review of the day. It is Man on the Moon 3, The Chosen, by Kid Cudi.
Yes. It is an album.
It is 18 songs, 58 minutes, and 24 seconds long, to be precise.
It does say that now. And this is... So Kid Cudi is a pretty long, storied kind of discography.
Yes.
In fact, the Man on the Moon 1 and 2 came out in, like, 2009, 2010.
Wasn't that his 2009? That was Day and Night was in First Man on the Moon, right?
Yes.
Day and night, day and night. The lonely stoner seems to free his mind at night. He's all alone, some things will never change. The lonely loner seems to free his mind at night. At night, hold the phone.
Day Night was like the
first
prototypical
thing
that's
the most 2000 song I can really think of, other than Usher Baby.
Yeah.
And that's when he kind of, like, Kid Cudi exploded. And the thing with Kid Cudi that we enjoy him when he's usually with people or, like, helps produce other stuff for a lot of projects, because I really don't hear him by himself too often, or him and his old stuff. Like the stuff with Kids See Ghosts with Kanye, there was some stuff in there that was fantastic. I really liked it. And so there were some other things where I'm like, Kanye needs to just chill a little bit.
Yeah, but we even talked about it in that review, that, like, that was a situation where both artists pare each other down enough to make them both tolerable.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So. And so since Man on the Moon 2, he's done like a bunch of different other little projects here and there, Kids See Ghosts being the more recent one.
Yep.
And then like projects within fully within his own like sort of repertoire, but like definitely going in a lot of different directions. But I think Man on the Moon 3 brings a lot of that craziness that is happening with Kid Cudi and his like creativity that's definitely there.
Yeah.
But gives some sort of like cohesion and sense to it and like the most sort of like logical project he has produced, I think.
I think it's the most cohesive one he's done in a long time, because that was always my problem with him, is he has so many ideas that a lot of it can get washed out a bunch. But this is the first time where I've heard an album straight through, everything is, it seems like it belongs in this album. There's still some stuff I don't necessarily like in here, but there's a lot I actually enjoy within the album, which I'm surprised about, actually.
Yeah, the first proper song is like Tequila Shots, Beautiful Trip is like a kind of short intro.
Yeah.
And the first half of the album that I would basically separate between like the beginning of the album and right before Mr. Solo Dula 3 is the first part of the album is a lot more trappy.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of albums tend to do this, especially if they're going to be more experimental in the second half. They do a lot of traps to bring you in. Just start with the bangers. Don't make everyone go, oh God, who gave him the ox? And then run away.
Yeah, like, all right, here we go. Another future part 8.
Who gave Caesar the ox, goddammit? Like, what's going on? But, like, no, you start with that, and it's really good.
I actually thought the trap production was pretty solid for the most part. I mean, at the first I heard Tequila Shots, I'm like, all right, this is good. Let me see if it, like, continues it or if it, like, stays flat. And going into another day, I thought it was actually pretty good. And this is the trap sound I like, where it's, almost, it's actually reminded me a lot of Childish Gambino's album earlier this year, where it's that almost like really low spoken voice, non-auto-tune, because he did some auto-tune stuff in here, which I do not like, but I'll get to that later. That like spoken, really low voice with pretty good like production in the background of the normal trap sounds, plus a lot of other like different sounds and little bloops in the background that make it a little unique.
Yeah, this album embraces a lot more of like Cudi's overall sort of growth, I guess. It's a lot more trappy than the first Man in the Moon 2 project.
Yes.
And you get like kind of the best of that and She Knows This, which does like a rap to trap sort of bridge in the middle. That's really nice and really tasteful. It just sort of speeds up the beat in the middle in a seamless way that you'd expect from like some other more seasoned artists. More on that later. But She Knows This is actually one of my favorite songs on the album, and it's weird because I don't like of the two halves that I mentioned earlier, the first half I think is the weaker part for sure.
For sure. Yeah. Yes, I'm in. I'm in this bitch. Don't take a flicks. Come at the treacherous bottomless pit. Yeah, I'm reborn and my life is a shit. Heaven. Go! Yeah. And she see me, she knows this. Yeah. And she screaming, she knows this. Yeah. And she see me, she knows this. Yeah. Yeah. And she see me, she knows. It is. She Knows It's a decent song. It just does the stupid trap things. I don't know if Travis Scott's on there, but it goes, yeah. And like it keeps doing that and stuff in the background. Like, that's the stuff of trap that I don't like. It gets so repetitive and annoying.
That's the part where I've just been broken down now.
Exactly. It's like, all right, we've heard this for 4 or 5 years.
It's like, I guess this is it.
Yeah. Like, is that all y'all got? That's stuff like that's annoying. But the Kid Cudi stuff, his rapping, his flow is fantastic on it. I really like the production other than that. I was like, okay, it's pushing it just that a little bit further. Not enough to where I'm like, this is gold, but it started to push it a little bit more, which is good.
Yeah. And really, once you get to like Dive, Damage, Heaven on Earth, they're perfectly
Dive
fine.
Good.
Dive, you like Dive specifically? Talk about that.
I just like it. I thought it was a good, because it's one of those trap songs that's short that I do like, and it has like different little experimentation with voices and stuff in there that I don't mind, so.
Yeah, it's definitely experimental with as the way the voice is concerned.
Yeah.
But I definitely felt like those, again, if I'm going to point out the filler part of the album, I can very directly point to it, and it's again, it's definitely not in the part that we're going to get to in a moment. It's right those three.
Yeah.
Even the show out with Skepta and Pop Smoke was very underwhelming.
Just,
I've heard a lot of Skepta, I've heard a lot of Pop Smoke, and even Posthumous Pop is better than this.
But yeah, again, for sure. It's just
making more of this.
That's what I was going to say, show out. Like, Skepta's part felt kind of, that's the only part of the album to me that felt out of place was kind of Skepta's part.
Yeah.
Just because his accent and stuff is so pronounced and everything, and I'm like, it's a little off-putting in that regard.
And it's like a classic, like, sort of Pop Smoke beat, where it's very, like, fast and
breakbeat,
like, New York-style kind of thing. And so it's, again, doesn't... If it fits anywhere on the album, it's where it is, so it's not, like, horribly out of place. But for the album, thematically, it's not quite there. And it's a feature, so that's why it's there, but it definitely doesn't need to be there. Mr. Solo Dolo 3 is this sort of bridge...
The bridge between the two,
yeah. And then, like, good, because up until this point, the album's been really trap-heavy and focused.
Mm-hmm. And then I was getting worried at that point. I'm like, okay, is it just literally going to be this the entire time? I'm like, I want to see the Wild Kid Cudi that I know and love and whatnot, and let's see what happens. And you get to it.
Yes. You get, like, also, and it gets in a Wild Kid Cudi, you just get, like, Sad Boy Kid Cudi.
You get Super Sad Boy Kid Cudi.
Classic thing.
Yeah.
And, like, there's sad, just, like, really deep things here. There's sad people.
Yeah,
which
I mean,
is
you
like
get
a,
that even before, too, with Damage, too. Or it's like, I'm a damaged man. I'm sad. I'm damaged.
Yes, of course. that's almost, like, verbatim the lyrics, I think. But, like, it's... You do get that Kid Cudi. It's really chill, and it's, like, a kind of bopping kind of flow to it. It's almost like... I hate that I'm now overusing this phrase, but it's bedroom trap.
I love that phrase, though, because it's a really good explanation of a lot of it.
It's not even like hype trap. It just like follows the construction. But it's barely even
it's
trap
one of those videos where it's like listening to Kid Cudi in the bathroom while crying.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like applying your eyeliner, applying your black eyeliner while listening to Kid Cudi.
Yeah. I think where, to me, I started to really like it was at September 16th. I thought that was a really good track where it's like really bridging experimental side, kind of like the airy flowiness of like your standard, like almost pop tracks, but mixing trap within there too. And a lot of industrial sounds in the background and stuff with the drum, the beats. And a soft voice in the background. I thought September 16 was a fantastic track. I'm like, okay, this is what I like to see.
Yeah, it's flat out not a rap song. It's like barely even
R&B.
It's like a full out sort of like airy sort of like, let's just go and do this thing with the lights.
Exactly.
The
it's just that mixing of genres, it becomes genreless almost, which I really like. It's pushing it forward, doing enough to something that I like. So it's good. After that, you have The Void, which is kind of similar where it's like, it's that airiness, almost that. Almost trap and beat, but not quite trap and beat, because the background beat almost sounds like a 1975, like a George Daniel production drum beat in the background. I'm like, okay, this is interesting. And then having like mixing the auto tune with the vocals and stuff was like trying to do something different, which I still don't never like a big fan of it per se, but it's stuff in there is a bit different, so it's good too.
The Void's a really like beautiful kind of song. It's kind of just like about like dissociating and like trying to go away from like avoiding things that bring you down by going into a void on its own.
Yeah,
it's a really kind of interesting juxtaposition to that, and it sort of sounds musically like. I was trying to pin it down. It's like a slow, sad version of Lenny Kravitz's I Want to Get Away.
It's that's random.
Like, it's like the sadder B-side to that song, even though I guess thematically they are kind of similar.
Yeah.
I just see a lot of like very, it's also very, again, take out the guitars, of course, but it's very airy. It's sort of slow. It has that sort of like almost early 2000s vaporwave kind of feel to it. That's really nice. Then you have
Loving Me with Phoebe Bridgers.
Yeah.
Which is a really random feature to have.
Didn't expect it to work.
Phoebe Bridgers, well, yeah, indie artist, I really enjoy her album earlier this year. It's a fantastic indie album, one of my favorites of the year. I actually like Loving Me a lot because it's doing a trap beat without being trappy. Yeah. So it's like doing that really nice drum beat in the background without having like your typical snares and other stuff. So it's almost throwing it back to, you know, that early 2000s style while mixing it with modern stuff, while mixing a male vocalist, the female vocalist. And you hear Phoebe Bridgers' lower range in this track a lot. And I actually like it a lot. I thought when I saw it on the album, I was just growing through before I listened, I saw with Phoebe, I'm like, okay.
That's honestly, it sounds like an early like turn of the 10s alternative song. Like, it's an alternative song, barely even like a rapper on it. Yeah. Just like Kid Cudi is just basically singing with this, trading like different bars with Phoebe Bridgers, but not bars in the rap sense. It's pretty wild. Good. Again, it's like it's showing the best of Kid Cudi's like ability to do this, and it's doing this thing in a way that, if I'm looking at the second part of the album in a vacuum, is better than even the earlier Man on the Moon. So it shows like a lot of like growth and success in that. Pale Moonlight kind of brings things down a bit, but it's also at the same time bringing things up because you're getting the return of like the trappier sound from the best of the album, which is good because
it was getting really sad and depressing there. You're starting to put on your eyeliner and you're starting to see a tear and you're like, please no, I don't want to smear it. And then Pale Moonlight comes like, all right, we're back, bitches. And then you put it back on and you're good to go to battle, you know?
Yeah. No, it's a good layout of the album too, which again, just like, This is an artiste working here. Mm-hmm. It's kind of...
And then after Pale Moonlight, you have Rockstar Nights with Trippie Redd. I still don't fuck with Trippie Redd. Don't like him. Don't like his music, really.
After three listens, I like it a little bit more. And I think it's one of those times where...
The song is okay.
Trippie Redd is brought down to a Kid Cudi level, and Kid Cudi's on his level, so like they're tolerable together.
Yeah.
I will never probably listen to a Trippie Redd song again unless it's a really slow week on Audio Face and it's a So You Don't Have To opportunity, but like...
That's it.
Yeah.
And For Their Kids is fine too. You have like, it's kind of combining again those slower sounds he had, the kind of that second part of the album mixed with the trap sounds he had at the top. So then it was like, those two songs are perfect, like literally trying to bridge the two parts of the album together and make it as a clean ending. And For Their Kids is that, and it's good.
Lord, I Know has like one of the sickest like beats and flows and endings I've heard from Kid Cudi possibly ever. Like, it's experimental, it's sort of like new wave. Like, it's honestly like Kanye at his best.
It reminded me almost a little bit of one of Stormzy's songs late last year that came out at Vossy Bop. It sounded almost like the drums reminded me a little bit of Vossy Bop, not as like trippy in the ears, but enough to where it's like, I haven't heard experimental trap drums like that in a while. And I really, really enjoyed it. It's one of my favorite any tracks of an album all year, honestly.
Yeah.
It's very, very good. And that's saying something because, you know, like, we love our enders here.
Yes, we need to really think about that award because there's too many, like, to even...
There's a lot.
We actually have to think about that and narrow that down. That might
usually there's, like, one that sticks out. Yeah, that's good. This year it's like, I really don't know what to do.
I mean, every month there is definitely, like, two albums I could pick from every month if I, went deep down and looked that were, like, really good album enders that were memorable.
You know, Musicians is an Audio Face confirmed.
Apparently. So yeah, this is a really good album, and like, I'm not like the biggest Kid Cudi head, but we know people who are. And
I know. Let's see. Did Caesar
is driving right now because we asked him his opinion, but Caesar really loves Kid Cudi and he really liked this album. So I'm gonna say it has like the Kid Cudi fan thumbs up.
Yeah.
And also, friend of the show, keeper of Kanye knowledge, Annie, also is a Kid Cudi fan. and says that, yeah, seeing the disappointing, like, previous albums that are separate from this project, you get this bounce back, which she says, like, pushes his skills forward and it's full of bangers. So it's very much making the old head.
The old heads, like it enough while making us, we generally like his music, but usually by himself, it's a bit much. But now turning us into be like, okay, yeah, he's actually a really good musician. We really like his solo work now.
And
too,
before so. We start handing out scores for this week, the all important arbitrary scale scores on AudioFace, maybe this might influence what we feel at a certain point. It definitely did for me. There was an interview that he did with Zane Lowe that Annie pointed out to me.
By the way, side note, Zane Lowe does really good interviews. I'm surprised how well of an interviewer he does for music. But anyways,
good. We have talked about that a little
bit. He's fantastic. He's very, very good.
But basically, Kid Cudi said in that interview that like he spent on a lot of the previous albums that are separate from the Man on the Moon project, like trying to prove himself that he, like all the other artists, could put out an album once a year and make it feel good. But he didn't like it. He hated the process, and he was basically like, he no longer felt that he wanted to prove that to people anymore.
Good.
And so he just decided he's going to make it a certain pace. He's going to focus on the things he focuses on. It's going to like be a great album. I mean, that's been a recurring thing that's come up with a lot of albums recently. I think there was like an R&B album we reviewed a couple, like maybe a month or so ago. A similar story, even from the beginning of the track and how it was like laid out. And artists listen to AudioFace possibly confirm this is the right way to do music, and you get good results when
you do
it.
That's what I've been saying the whole time. So it's, yeah, great to hear.
Arbitrary scale this week is hair dye brands.
If you know Rudius Giulianius, his hair dye decided to, you know, just kind of trickle down in the middle of like saying how Trump is, you know, not going to concede, and like, he is the rightful heir to the throne, and he should be the one on the Iron Throne and all that jazz.
He's a little, let's say, He's in need of a new hair dye, so we're gonna give him some.
We're gonna give him some brands, some little help of hair dye, you know.
Yeah, this is honestly this is the Just for Men with a Touch of Grey.
Fucking A, I was gonna say the same thing. I'll be saying like whatever is the one that's the comb one, the specific comb one where it's like it has that random white dude like smiling like this on the side, and it has like silver fox.
Because it's meant to show youth and experience.
There you go, exactly. So this is Just for Men, Touch of Grey.
Touch of Grey.
For the suave in your family.
You know, just a suave. Using suave body wash.
Oh, Lord. All right.
So Clubhouse is a brand new, relatively new app. It got a lot of fun in Silicon Valley and that sort of space, because it's basically the tech bro shit-talking app.
Yes.
But recently it's made its cross into the music scene, and especially into the trap music scene.
Oh,
where recently there was a
yes.
really fun conversation involving DJ Academics and a whole like slew, like a murderer's row of murderous rappers.
You've got Meek Mill, 21 Savage, you have Tory Lanez,
Lil Yachty,
a bunch of like a shit ton of.
And the matter at hand was essentially the fact that DJ Academics has this certain position in the music industry, basically right now, as like head snitch. Not actually, but he runs one of those like aggregator, those like gossip aggregators. Like Shade Room, TMZ, ones that we from time to time use as sources, because that's like what we do as a music podcast.
I mean, our favorite AudioFace ever was the infamous TMZ video. Listen, of Triple XXXTentacion getting killed.
Whoever got the video of XXXTentacion's spleen getting spliced in a luxury car dealer parking lot, like we would have gotten that footage and credited them. That's just how journalism works.
Exactly, we'd be like, thank you for your service.
Yeah, but like that's. There is the downside that all this gossip gets put out there, different stories and sides get added to the story, things get complicated with people, and there could be some danger with like what stories out there. But there's a whole lot of like things to say about the gossip industrial complex, and it all kind of came out here. Like half the conversation was them just like clowning on Academics, half of it was just like Tory Lanez and Meek Mill like basically making their case that Academics is a liar, that his lies have put him in tough situations. It was a really kind of revealing conversation, because the way it's essentially just like a voice Zoom call. There's no video.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone can mute and unmute themselves at the same time, and you just see each other's icons. It's a pretty interesting social app that Twitter is relatively smart in stealing its features and about to offer it next year. So get ready for Twitter Clubhouse with Gavin McGinnis and whoever's not banned, but he's actually banned. But anyways, I think the funniest thing about this entire thing was, besides the fact that Academics got clowned as looking as like a extra in Kim Possible, was the fact that 21 Savage was moderating and like mediating the conversation.
The best thing.
And actually kind of making the best points.
Yes, 100%.
Because we're talking about the gossip industrial complex. He's basically saying, look, like, if we hear about gossip, I'm going to talk to my homie and we're going to be like, yo, did you hear about that thing? Yeah, I heard about it. Woo, 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 woo. Like that kind of thing. But
we're not going to post about it.
Yeah, we're not going to post about it to Instagram.
Because we don't know the whole scoop.
Yeah. And we know what's going to happen. We know that that's going to feed this gossip industrial complex. That's how Shade Room, TMZ, all those other people are going to get their likes and get their publicity. And then everyone's going to speculate. And it's out in public now. Like, that's just kind of the open deal. So, like, it's good that these conversations kind of happen out in the open. It's very adjacently related to even, like, music culture. But it's, like, very directly related to, like, who reports it and, like, how that gets sort of seen by people. So it's a really sort of illuminating conversation.
It shows you the maturity and the genius of 21 Savage.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's hilarious to see, like, everybody in that call just going off, and 21 going like, no, you need to chill, because hey, do you remember how you and you used to be friends, right? But you know what happened? TMZ ruined that. This is why.
Someone posted a picture saying, this is 21 Savage's character development, and there's a picture of Zuko from Avatar.
Dead ass. From Savage Mode 1 to Savage Mode 2. He is Zuko. That's great. Speaking of inverse Zuko.
Next on the Guillotine Report, we have Kanye West and the Sunday Service Choir. It appears that the Sunday Service Choir is suing Kanye West over a little thing we like to call in the biz unpaid wages.
Also known as indentured servitude.
Sounds like a choice to me. The Yeezy founder was accused of, reading from Screen Rant, owing overtime funds for a staff team that was hired to work on his first Sunday service event. The particular performance was based on the King of Babylon, a biblical figure. It was held at the Hollywood Bowl, produced by Live Nation, but following the highly publicized event, certain contract workers complained about not receiving their overtime pay. Basically, you hear these kind of details that are very natural from a Kanye West sort of thing, where it was 3 weeks late and happened last minute and it was completely disorganized. But yeah, Kanye West and Live Nation being sued $1 million for failing to provide pay stubs and failing to pay minimum wage and overtime, among other grievances.
Jesus Christ.
I mean,
pay your taxes, dude. Pay your shit. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, it's just another one of those simple things we'd like to go over. Just like,
it doesn't surprise me.
All these stars be doing all the most extra. Like, I've got this genius idea, and what I'm gonna do is run for president so I can help with my genius idea. And it's like,
you can't even pay your own people.
Cut your grass.
Cut your grass. Exactly.
It's like, please, actually, just like, think about this a little bit, please. Next album. We have Nightmare Vacation by Rico Nasty. It came out last week, but of course we were
off break. Yes.
So, you know, that's how it goes. It is 16 songs long, 39 minutes long, and Rico Nasty's got a really interesting sort of vibe. She does a combination of like experimental alternative trap with like elements of like
shock and and industrial. There's a lot of sounds.
There's elements of like industrial, there's elements of like punk music and even like screamo and emo in there. But there's also elements of like fucking City Girls.
Yeah, half exactly. The time. It's just there's a lot. It's interesting.
It's a whirlwind. It's a lot of emotions.
I actually really like the opening song of Candy. I thought it was a great opener track. I'm like, all right, like this just goes right into your face. It almost felt like Sophie a little bit with the production of it, because it's like almost like with the bass, it's like overblowing bass, and like the trap sounds and whatnot are like all scratched and like cut up and stuff, and the lyrics and whatnot just in your face and just go at it right away. I'm like, okay, I can get on board with this.
Took it off 'cause it looked cool. I got niggas who take your you can see the shit. Oh, looky here.
The next song after that is
Don't Like Me featuring Don Toliver and Gucci Mane.
I do kind of have a preference to Don Toliver, so I do like this collaboration. It sounds very much like one of his songs. It's kind of chimey and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's all right. I just really hate this voice. I just hate the... Whoever did the super hyphy voice on here, awful. That part was awful. Horrible.
Yeah, that's
the rest of it was fine. And actually, Gucci was actually not bad on the... It was just really weird hearing Fuckboy Gucci. that was like, all right, this is a different flow, but all right.
I love that's weird hearing Fuckboy Gucci because I feel like that's all I hear is Fuckboy Gucci.
I just remember Gucci from like Trap House 3, okay?
Okay, yeah. There's Fuckboy Gucci and there's Get the Money Gucci.
Exactly. I'm just way too used to Get the Money Gucci because everything else, basically since the Human Glacier, Gato the Human Glacier, I just haven't listened to another Gucci thing because there's like 1,000 releases. So, since he got released from jail, I don't know.
Yeah. After that, you kind of get into some really kind of Sophie-ish kind of songs, honestly.
For sure.
They're very experimental, like almost like hyper-pop, but very kind of dialed back a little bit. Not quite for a mainstream sort of like audience and acceptance.
Definitely not.
But it's for a lot of people who find hyper-pop to be very sort of like, oh, that's a lot of like glitchy noise to take in. This is definitely like a smoother way to get into
for it. For sure, because it's something that I can get into. Check me out. I like because it's... It's that bridge for a lot of people who don't like it per se to get into it. So I actually like Check Me Out a lot. Yeah. I thought it is a lot, so you kind of need to be in a mood for it and whatnot. So you need to be like driving and raging or maybe in working out or some shit.
Yeah, I would say STFU was like a good version of that as well. Mm-hmm. Where like it's kind of like it's a soft dubstep background.
Yeah.
It's like
this, because the song before that iPhone, I did not like iPhone at all.
Yeah,
I thought that's just a bit too many sounds wrapped into one. Was just like, oh, okay.
It basically sounds like you take Rico Nasty's like style already, that's already very hyper pop focused, and you throw in 100 gex.
Exactly, and it's just like this is way too much shit because that high pitched voice with all the production in it, I'm like, I can't. This is just a bit much. But as like Shut the Fuck Up afterwards, like, okay, this is a little bit better too.
And like part of the cool thing of it in a strictly hyper pop context is it is. The song itself is in reaction to pop music, and so it's subverting and taking those sounds and glitching them as like a joke.
Yep.
But this is in the context of a rap album, so hyperpop is just like, it's removing the context like one step too much, so it doesn't really work in what I think of. Then you get to Back and Forth with Aminé, which is an amazing fuck song.
Which is like, this is, I'm glad she put this in there because it's a great like rest break track. It just like breaks, like, okay, rest.
Yeah.
Chill, and this is good. Aminé, I really, really like an Aminé now. I mean, and forth. I don't want to do none of the back and forth. Talk to me nice, so don't talk at all. When you're talking shit, then you turn me on. Word, get back and forth. I don't want to do none of the back and forth. Talk to me nice, so don't talk at all. When you're talking shit, then you turn me on. You got a smart mouth, I'ma put my kitty in it. I like to flip my money, stack it up and triple the shit. I'm independent, got my own boss, don't make a stand. I got a nigga from LA who always do with them zips. I got a nigga out in Houston. More and more of the stuff I hear from him, his features, all of his albums this year, and the stuff like the song is Slow Tie and Disclosure is fantastic too. Get Off My High or whatever. Yeah. That song's fantastic.
I remember that Aminé was actually one of my music recommendations from a year ago because I like the song Reel It In from 1.5, his album right before Limbo.
Okay. And it was so, but Back and Forth, fantastic. Like, this is just like that great, this is that good fuckboy shit right here. Like, that's that, eat it up, shoot it up.
Shoot what up? Girl Scouts next. That's going to be taken out of context really beautifully. But yeah, it's Girl Scouts reminds me of some of the weirder Ray Schremmer beats, like Antisocial
Smokers Club. Yeah, I was going to say, it reminded me a bit of Ray Schremmer. That's what I was going to say. It's funny you say the same thing, where it's just like that almost...
Off kilter, out of tune.
Exactly, yeah. Where it's like...
Like you're smoking an indica and you're just like, I'm stuck here. I'm just going to be in the couch now and I'm just going to be like spacing out and looking at stars and... whatever Jamie Hewlett is drawn for Damon Albarn in any given day. Hashtag hologram back.
Hashtag hologram back. Damn, we should have done Gorillaz holograms. Because there's like 10 of them. We're like, which one?
Which was straight, like, we're just going to put that in a box and not even talk about that in this podcast. Otherwise, it's 8 hours.
One day, just bonus episode, like, hey, Dan, we haven't recorded in 3 weeks because we still have like 2 weeks to go in January. Like, you want to record about hologram back? It's like random. For shits and giggles.
Dan, where has hologram Beck touched you? But as we get back to this album, we get friend of the show Trippy Red. Yeah. Are here. And I do, as opposed to the Man on the Moon Kid mm-hmm. Cudi album we reviewed recently, yes. Where Trippy Red was paired down enough mm-hmm. to really work, Rico Nasty is paired up. And Trippy Red is paired up. And as a result, I don't really like it.
And this is horrible. This is really bad. It's just like that. It's the stuff with Trap I don't like, per se. But it's like, the beat isn't bad. The beat is slowed down. It's just the voices are just
and I like the so hook. Annoying. I like the hook. Like, we're going shopping, loser, get in. It's the very funny hook.
Exactly.
But like, yeah, I don't this think the voices match very well
together. It's
just
distracting. It's bad. Put
bluntly, Rico Nasty and Trippy Red's voices together just make them sound more obnoxious than they already can
and
sound.
And you don't want that.
Yeah.
No Debate after that is fine. I thought that, like, that's just your standard trap. That one just sounds like your standard trap song after that, which is the first one really where it's like, okay, standard trap, because everything else is experimental, hyper typhy, all the other stuff that is actually do that.
But even like there's concept. Nothing in here that's like, oh, this is bland trap. Everything here is trying something different, which is like,
which is nice.
I think we've finally gotten like 3.5 years into this podcast, a week where we're reviewing trap music albums that like don't sound repetitive
that don't trashy. Sound that don't sound the same at all, like two trap albums that are very different
back to back and like within the genre very different and like finally it took this long and again it's too few people doing this because Rico Nasty's still on the come up and everything but like
and then after that you got her City Girls song Pussy Poppin and that's just like that's just right in your face. Well, I actually really like the bass in here too because it's experimenting. It's like almost like bubbly beat in the background, like distorted bubbly beats.
That's like 80s hip hop kind of.
Yeah, I like it actually. So here we go.
Yeah, you have. I mean, like, I'll be real. Like the rest of the songs through here, like OFR or Tenfo, all of those are kind of whatever. I really love Smack a Bitch.
Oh, I said, but can we get a Smack a Bitch, please?
Yes, absolutely. So there's the bonus track, which makes this a little bit longer than it should be. So maybe the album's 37 minutes. But Smack a Bitch is just like, it's a murderer's row of everything that's great about Rico Nasty.
It's really good. I love this track because it's like having her voice not too in your face on it, but she's still yelling and gets you into it. The production is fantastic. It's that industrial sound mixing with normal trap sounds too to blend the two together, and it's great. In your face, just no apologies going in at it. Fantastic.
One of the rappers, I think it's PP Cocaine, sounds like a grown-up version of Angelica from Rugrats becoming like a grime rapper near the end. Like it's kind of like I vibe with the entire thing. I just love it. Like it's again, you would pair this with STFU. You're in a mood. You're driving down the freeway like very quickly, and you're just like upset.
You're having to weave through traffic on Fairfax. You're just playing Smack a Bitch. Windows roll down.
It's Fuck Fax Friday. My new show on. No, but like there is, especially for Rico Nasty's first like proper dropout come thing, like it is very solidly very good. There's definitely a lot of stuff working here. There's similarly to the Kid Cudi album, you're starting to focus yourself in more.
Mm-hmm.
It's the perfect length, I think. I think.
Oh, that's a great. I really like. There's a great. Like there's that towards the end, the last two songs right before Smack a Bitch are kind of the only two filler songs to me towards the end. But Smack a Bitch again. Yeah. One of my favorite albums, and there's two where you're like, damn, this is good. Maybe if it wasn't for Smack a Bitch, I would have thought the album was a little lackluster towards the end, but after that, I was like, all right, this is a solid album.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's getting me more into a genre that I don't really like, too, which is interesting as well.
I mean, which of all the genres?
There's of trap, all of it, there's exactly. Hyperpop, there's it's like... everything. This should be the Sean Murderous row of this is bullshit. This shouldn't be music. I am Ben Shapiro. You should listen to classical music only. But no, it's
dry
it's,
turkey.
my wife's a doctor, but it's nice because it really starts to get out to audiences and stuff who want to get into it, who can now appreciate more of it as well. So,
yeah. Arbitrary scale this week: hair loss brands, hair growth brands. I'm gonna use. Actually, this is gonna be hair dye, and I'm gonna go with Revlon.
You're gonna go with Revlon?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go by Color & Co. by L'Oreal.
That's a good one because it's the really colorful.
It's like the colorful one where it's just like you go mental with it, and some dudes definitely. You know, there are some dudes on The Bachelor that definitely color their hair like that, and it's like pretty obvious. You're like, all right, over there, bud.
3,000,000,000%. And now this is a somber moment. We've got to do the death corner.
Death corner.
This is the end of Radio Disney.
Rest in peace, Radio Disney, boys.
A lot of people have forgotten about this part of the Disney empire.
You know how many child stars that have done cocaine were on Radio Disney? There's a lot.
Yeah, so after 24 long storied years, according to The Hollywood Reporter...
Was it really on for 24 years?
24 years.
Holy shit.
Our entire lives. Our literal entire lives. Radio Disney will cease operations in early 2021, except for Radio Disney Latin America, because of course. And that Latin America is just a very like popular audience for music, and so they just like consume music more intensely than Americans do.
If
they're gonna keep
true.
Anything, they'll keep it like that. Yeah, Disney's doing a massive corporate restructuring anyways, which is basically corporate speak for if it's not Disney Plus, get out of our way.
Pretty much, yeah. Where they announced like 1,000 Star Wars shows, which I'm on board for because you're doing The Mandalorian justice, but it's just like just chilling out.
Yeah.
For Disney Plus, heavy.
Founded in 1996. Disney provided a platform for some of the biggest stars of Disney, including the Jonas Brothers, Miley Cyrus, Demi Lovato, and Selena Gomez.
All done
and
coke.
At one point, absolutely, probably together.
Fuck it, why not?
And then Zach and Cody are just like drinking sparkling water by the side, just going like...
I'm going to have my Sprite.
Yeah. I'm going to go drive the Prindle. Now, apparently there's... That's a deep cut. Wow. Radio Disney used to have like 23 different radio stations, but they sold 22 of them off already. So the last one was KRDC in Los Angeles, which is going to be auctioned off. And there's definitely... I remember the Radio Disney jingle very often on like drives to school when my parents were scrambling for... kid-appropriate things to play in the car that weren't morning talk radio.
Morning talk, oh yeah, morning talk radio.
Which clearly I listened to too much of, apparently.
Hi, I'm Dan. Welcome to, thank you, Dan, it is Friday. And Pierre voice, Dan.
I mean, it's going to be Twitch streaming, so if anything, it's just like Hassan Piker Malding voice.
Oh, God. Are you going to have to censor yourself all the time? I remember watching some of like Hassan's clips every once in a while where it's like half of it just like bleeped out and stuff. I'm like, you need to stop being, you need to learn more vocabulary there, sir.
Yeah. Well,
you need to rotate your racial slurs.
I'm going to tap the brakes on that. And with that, our last proper album of... this year of Audioface.
Yeah.
The Avalanches, We Will Always Love You. It is 25 songs long, an hour and 11 minutes long, and goddamn The Avalanches. We did a bonus episode on them recently. You could just check that out. But the gist of it is that they're an Australian duo. They started in 2000 with their debut album, Since I Left You.
Their
style is called Plunderphonics. They essentially take old samples and recordings from music genres of all kinds and throw them together and make music out of them.
Like, similar to that, like Daft Punk without being electronic, like strictly electronic music.
Yeah, they're making electronic and hip-hop, trip-hop kind of music generally. Exactly. But yeah, they're
sampling a bunch of other stuff and doing a lot with sounds.
Yeah, and we're talking like thousands in their earlier albums, thousands and thousands of samples. Yeah. There's a big gap between their first and second album.
Yes, like a
Wildflower. It was 16 years.
16 year.
Yeah.
Gap, yep.
Wildflower came out in like 2016, 2017 ish. It was very different as a concept, but still kept a lot of the Avalanches style. And now you have a third album, which is very interesting because once you get a third album, you get to really see a broad range of an artist's like. Depth and width and where they're willing to go and able to go. And, god damn.
I was joking with Dan, like when we were kind of going through, like, can I just go back to listen to this album, because I just want to listen to this album some more. There's a lot there is a lot in here. By the way, it is 25 songs, an hour and 11 minutes. A lot of the songs are like Humans, where it's like that kind of filler, the bridge stuff.
Yeah.
But it makes sense in the context of the album, because literally they are genre bending completely, like seven different genres into one song, where like, or one album, where you need something to bridge it up, or else you'll have a trap song mixed with a glitchy EDM weirdness mixed with some like daydream pop. Like, it's just, and you need stuff to be able to do that.
And I put my cards on the table. I think if you actually like put a gun to my head and told me to name the best like people who can like put together an album in the way an album can be constructed, it's probably the Avalanches.
Yeah.
In a sense that like, the album should go together, the song should go and flow through together, and they very much do that, and that's the way they've always done. Every Avalanches album kind of has a theme, less so with Wildflower, but since I Left You, their first one was kind of like an international love dance record, and this one is about death and like passing and all of those different things. And so the entire album is decidedly, especially for the Avalanches, kind of not somber necessarily, but quiet.
Melancholy. Yeah, very silent. No, quiet, muted, basically. Yeah. It's like the great way to describe it.
This album doesn't have a Frankie Sinatra or Frontier Psychiatrist.
No. Yeah. But it's ridiculously good.
Well, let's go into it, and then we'll start to get into the production as well.
Yep.
So yeah, you just like...
Ghost Story starts off, it's just like a little like opening track, or one that's a minute long, just... random voices in the background and stuff, just kind of just
The Avalanches are a really good thing, where like they do this, the motifs through this album again, like the first one was the horse hooves for Frontier Psychiatrist. This is like a message, maybe like a last message left from like a loved one who is passing on, saying like, you'll always have my voice, I'll always be here, like giving some like calming messages which go throughout again the theme of the album. You get Song for Barbara Payton, and it's very kind of classic like Avalanches style, in that you are getting some like looping really nice track to go together. It sounds like it's jazz, and like it's sampled from like oldies music in general.
Yes.
But what you'll kind of start to notice with this album is that you'll see features and featured artists, and they're kind of acting as the sample.
Which is, that's the interesting thing I was going to get into, because We Will Always Love You with Blood Orange.
Title track, third track,
yeah. And this is the song, like, to get you into the album and to hear what the sound is, this is, like, the perfect song for it. It's that, like, bridging the theme of, like, lo-fi hip-hop beats to study to, mixed with a lot of experimental different sounds and stuff to upbeat you. Almost like some of, like, Graduation era Kanye, like, of that really nice hip-hop beats into it. It's cool because you can hear some of the samples in the background, almost like choir sounds and other stuff. Plus then Blood Orange does, like, his vocals and stuff on it are really good in it.
Yeah.
So this is like a perfect track to kind of represent everything. And it's a great like third thing, and like this will set you up for the album, especially.
Right,
great
title track. Right after that, Divine Chord featuring Johnny Marr and MGMT.
Johnny fucking Marr and MGMT. Johnny Marr, by the way, if you don't know what Johnny fucking Marr is, that's what Brandon Flowers called Johnny Marr. He went up to stage in Glastonbury last year. and then MGMT, one of my favorite bands. Everyone knows my love for MGMT.
Little Dark Age was one of the Audio Face Award winners.
Woo, that was a good album.
And again, like, this sounds like the Avalanches sampled MGMT.
It literally sounds like it, because if you are like a big MGMT head like I am, this sounds like some of the demos and stuff from Oracular Spectacular Days and some of it. But then it's definitely, I can see his curly, weird-ass hair. I cannot think of his name, but the vocals for MGMT. It's his voice going on in the background and everything. And it's cool. It's just, like, bumping it back and forth. And it's, like, it's a really good beat on it. Almost sounds like a Christmas theme on it. Yeah, Andrew, there we go.
Yeah.
Because his last name is really long.
Van Wijngarden.
Yeah.
But like,
his voice is fantastic.
It's a very recognizable MGMT song, but it's a very standard collaboration in the sense that, like, this is a new work. the Avalanches called up MGMT and they're like, hey, yo, this is us, wanna do. And like, it ended up working out. But it's a very deliberate thing that happens through all the songs that like, the Avalanches said, this is not really a Plunderphonics album in the same way that Since I Left You was.
Yeah, and even it definitely
Wildfly was a departure because, put blankly, sampling music takes a lot of work and it's a lot of clearing and you have to like pick over how it wants to sound.
Just, yeah.
Now you can just play some live instruments, sample things here and there, get some artists to come on, and then it's just much more concisely what you want.
And I need to see what part Johnny Marr does, because there's no guitar in here, but I don't know if he's playing bass or not, which could be the case, because Johnny Marr is the guitarist of the Smiths. For those of you who don't know who Johnny Marr is, who I don't know, you don't know who he is, but anyways. So it's interesting, I need to look up that part, but this is, the Divine Chord is such a good song. I love it a lot.
Yes.
So, this made me like, this sucked me into the album. I'm like, all right, I'm in, let's go.
Yeah. And again, like the album is very like, a lot of the other Avalanches albums are very more fast paced and this is airy and...
It's what I like.
A little bit sad.
It almost reminds me of like the XX or a couple other stuff I've listened to this year. That is that little bit more airy style of electronic music. After Divine Chord, you have Solitary Ceremonies, which is a little bridge between Divine Chord and Interstellar Love, and then you have Interstellar Love with Leon Bridges. And as much as I like Divine Chord, this is my favorite song on the album.
Really?
100%.
Interstellar Love?
100%. Somebody's kidding. This was the only song I accidentally listened to outside of the album, because they only did like one thing. Like, you know how we try not to listen to Friday Face? But this came on one of my indie channels on SiriusXM, and I was like, this song is ridiculously good. What is it? I looked and I was like, the Avalanche is like, fuck! I didn't want to listen to this until I listened to the album. Damn it. And I didn't listen to it again. I was like, so I was waiting for this week and I was like, I can't. So I listened to it on like Wednesday. I was like, I need my heroin right now. And it's their love. Oh. This is everything I like in electronic, it's some of my favorite sounds of electronic music into one song. So, it's fantastic.
Yeah. It's very like soft in the middle because it feels like there's going to be a build up, but it's just like this
it's
really
not,
kind of soft.
It's just like it's super chill within
kind of
it. It's just like, it's like that perfect like drive, like groove to you're happy, you're content. Like it's just, it's a really good song. I love it.
Yeah. Ghost Story Part 2's little interlude, also using some of the Arono and Leon Bridges like sessions, so you're getting
some of the sound and
pseudo Plunderphonics kind of style. You get into Reflecting Light, which is a really nice soulful song that almost reminds me of like, again, a very mellow Odessa.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, which is nice how they're able to play to that like sort of big
beat.
EDM.
I love the vocal. I love the vocalists in this song a lot too.
Yeah, it's really
the
beautiful.
Beat and everything is just it's really good. After that, you have Career Waves, again, another little bridge into it, The Sun with Two Ends.
Yes.
Which is a real, like, with Perry Farrell. This is where they start to experiment a little bit more disco beats, that funk groove beats, and
which is very much why I like the Avalanches. When they do that, it's very fun.
It's like, okay, I love this. So you start like the part, like the first half of the album is more of that like experimental airy side of electronic, and now you're getting more into the funkness of the album too. And it's just like, this is like you can hear some of the 70s samples that are in this mixed with kind of the chiller beats at the beginning of the album too. So it's like a perfect little thing to put if you want more disco. Grace, a segue into it.
We Go On continues that like bass heavy disco vibe, at least the beat as well. It's really nice with that Cola Boy and Mick Jones kind of like
fantastic
backdrop.
Yep.
It's really beautiful stuff here. And there's so much range. You're still like kind of kept guessing. It's the experience of an Avalanches album, and like Avalanches albums are truly experiences. Oliver and I talked about that a lot in the episode. Mm-hmm. Make sure you check that out. But it is just so nice to hear everything kind of come together. There's different instruments and different things throughout every song, but everything still sounds very Avalanche. It mm-hmm. still sounds like those sort of like early 2000s beats that are chopped up and sampled with those kind of crunchy drums over the top the entire time. It's amazing to, especially with a Plunderphonics band, still be able to maintain cohesion over two decades and three albums.
Yeah, which is crazy. You guys saw you saw on IMG, another little interlude into Until Daylight Comes, which is, this is what I call the Tycho part of the album, where it's just that really slow, even more airy parts of the first album, and a lot more like experimentation into it too. So a lot more of like random kind of sounds here or there, a little bit more vocal stuff, a little bit more like talking stuff. And then after that, you got Wherever You Go with Jamie XX, Nina Cherry, and Calypso.
It's a hell of a track.
Which is, it's I this track grew on me. The first time I listened to it, there's a lot of sounds in it. That bottom half of it where it gets like really fun, housey. Almost like a housey garage beat. I'm like, ooh, okay, now we're talking. This is good.
I mean, I like the, like, to me, it's everything I love about an Avalanche song. It's my favorite on the album. It's one of the ones we heard as a single, which I was like, oh, I gotta stop. But it's weird how Avalanche songs, they're technically not supposed to be like very human or emotional, because it's like you're taking things from all these different places. But they're very thoughtfully crafted in that way to fit these sort of messages. So Wherever You Go kind of sounds like the last song you hear as you're on like a solo mission blasting out into space.
Yeah.
It's like, this is supposed to make you think of like mankind and humans.
And then the next song, Music Makes Me High, is a polar opposite. This is like, you're straight up in the club, just dancing, having your drink on, just like having a grand old time, just like chill. You're just bopping your head. Like that's a, it's a funny song to have right after Wherever You Go. It's a good,
And they transition together.
Because they transition together, and it's good because you have that like, you feel like you're going out with Wherever You Go, and then it, Music Makes Me High, like, brings you back to reality. It, like, sets you in there. Sometimes, you know, you get that feeling of, that euphoric feeling of when you're daydreaming and you kind of, like, escape, and then you get set back to reality. That's what it feels like.
Yeah. It, even with, like throughout the entire album, and again with, like, Wherever You Go being part of what I love about the Avalanches, is that the transitions even within the song are my favorites. Mm-hmm. The fact that it goes from this like very soft sort of like crooning like lullaby ballad to this housey dance thing, and then back and forth and back and forth, and then before you know it, you're in that other song with Music Makes Me High. It's just like a very wild ride. You get into Pink Champagne, which was going to be the title of the album until the Avalanches decided it sounded too much like Drake.
Wait, really?
Yes.
That's fucking hilarious. And I love you guys for that, because on God, fuck Drake. And after that, Pink Champagne, little interlude, you have Take Care and You're Dreaming with Denzel Carey, Tricky, and Sampa the Great.
Which is such a good pairing.
Which is just like, out of nowhere, I'm just like, whoa, all right. Now we get into like, straight up experimental trap in this, and it's such a
It's such a good pairing.
Flashing the flicker was a dream. Providing for the children, just to hope I saw being loops very easy. My parents, they took care of me. Made sure opinions were heard, because it was getting rude. Made a kid things. I was looking in the back when I felt
it's like a really, really good song. This is my thing with trap. I love it when outside producers make trap. Like with Vince Staples, when Sophie made parts of like Yeah Right with Vince Staples. Love it.
Yeah.
Love it when EDM mixers and other producers come into trap, because that's when you really get to push it forward. And this is such a good song.
So good. I want to see more Sampa the Great and Denzel Curry for sure.
100%.
More in my veins. And I can just keep going through these songs.
Overcome. More of that like beautiful like funk groove stuff with a really cool chime beat in the middle of it. Right After, which is a great song right after Take Care and You're Dreaming. Gold Sky after that with Kurt Vile is It just has like an acoustic guitar part. It has more of that airy, almost Tycho sounding stuff, but his vocals are a little bit more prevalent.
The end of Avalanche's albums always are kind of like land you at a nice sort of blissful place, and the context is always different. With Since I Love You, it's like a love context. With Wildflower, it's a little all over the place. And with this, it's almost sort of that like being put to rest, like kind of resting place thing. Even with Dial D for Devotion with Karen O, Experimental and Wild is like, not wild per se, but just like very much like anti-music and like not much in it.
And there's something that I, when I listened to this song, I had to pause it because I never thought they would sample this. This is Born to Lose. There's a Steve Reich composition of electric guitar called Electric Counterpoints, and there's three parts of it. Johnny Greenwood plays this a lot on his solo gigs. And Born to Lose, you know that guitar part, Born to Lose?
Yeah.
That is sampling Steve Reich's Electric Counterpoint. That is Electric Counterpoint, I believe that is two, the middle part.
Wow.
So it's either two or three. And I, no, sorry, it's three because it's the ending part, because it's when you're looping the guitar. It's 11 loops of a guitar. And they're sampling that in Born to Lose and made it into a beat. And I just sat there and I was like, holy fucking shit. Like, there's no way. Like, they put Electric Counterpoint in this. That is the randomest random song of all to put into Born to Lose, and it's so cool.
I think this is the Radiohead Reddit, and it's Johnny's exact cover. So that was the one that was.
Wait, they put Johnny's in here? Actually, like Johnny was sampled in it.
Yeah. So it's Johnny Greenwood playing that one there.
Johnny Greenwood playing Steve Reich's Electric Counterpoint in Born to Lose from the Avalanches. That is 18 levels audio face, like, love deep of, like, holy shit, there is a lot in this. Because that's when I heard it, I sat there, I was like, holy fuck, they're playing Electric Counterpoint. That's Johnny, though, so Electric Counterpoint.
Yes. And so, like, again, there's still a little bit of sampling in this album. They're still taking little bits and pieces here. They're still
Why doing couldn't we release this, like, 2 months ago? Just for that goddamn song, so then I could have, like, nominated this for, like, everything of the year, just for that little bit. I mean, well, technically, still can, but it's hard because I like things to grow on me more.
Yeah.
But Jesus Christ, this album's ridiculous. And then, sorry, moving on from my little thing, you got Music is the Light with Cornelius and Kelly Moran.
I love Kelly Moran.
Kelly Moran?
Yeah.
Really good.
Again, just really nice pairings, really beautiful voices. You're letting the album end. And Weightless is just like this sort of like Morse code.
Random exactly. Just like boop, boop, boops,
yeah.
Beep, boop, ups, which is kind of fun to have.
Yeah, but it's, again, like it's a nice sort of ending, and it sort of ties in the motif again of like, we will always love you. Like, death
so
is
by the way, like, scratch the Divine Chord for me, my favorite, Born to Lose, because if I did not know that it was Johnny's exact sample of Electronic Counterpoint, so... Born to Lose is my favorite.
Yeah, this is the
core. Very, like, tied with the Divine Chord.
Yeah, this is the chord packing episode for a reason, so we can definitely
divine chord.
Pack the chords.
Yes.
In that case.
It's Interstellar Love, sorry.
Yeah. Incredible album. Goddamn wonderful, like, across the board. I love listening to it.
It's crazy.
It's one of the few albums I can actually listen to, like, while I'm sleeping, and it's really nice, because my third, my
and
second
you know
to
what, you know what, okay, I think I brought this point up on Audioface, where sometimes I fall asleep to music, and the next time I listen to it, I get really, it, like, sounds completely different.
Yeah, you have.
It's something I don't understand, and I actually want some, an audio doctor, somebody to explain that to me one day.
If you're a brain doctor.
Please, because it is something that I want to understand more. But anyways, this did the thing, the very rare thing where I fell asleep to it too. Sounds the same. They're very, very rare. There's only a couple of things that I can listen to, like my favorite musical artist I can listen to in that. And this album did that too, which is crazy. Moving on to hair dye, our Arbitrary Squirrels hair dye brands. This doesn't even need hair dye. You're just good.
Yeah,
your hair naturally. This is that black dog crack, or this is that you're that Spaniard that has like that silver hair that naturally goes, and all the women are like, that's a sexy Spaniard right there with like the bushy eyebrows and shit. And you're just like, you accept for who you are. You still have that curly chest hair coming out too, and you're like, this is who I am. Fuck it, I don't need any hair dye. Damn it.
The original Dos Equis guy.
There we go. Yeah, the original Dos Equis guy. Exactly like that.
Jonathan Goldsmith, who is, by the way, Jewish, not at all even Latin. But, like, imagine if he were Spaniard. And, like, we would do that. But, no, yeah, it's an incredible goddamn album, and I'm very glad to be doing it.
This is why I love this fucking podcast. Because I would have listened to this maybe, like, a year, like, from now or something. It would have popped up in my, some of my stuff. Yeah.
And with that, we have the last Audio Face stories of the year. The quick hits. First off, Drake is selling smells, more specifically his smells. He has just announced scented candles that smell like Drake. He's falling in a trend that was started this year, possibly by Gwyneth Paltrow with her Goop scented candle. I almost said flavored candle. Anyways,
Kalani. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I almost said, so Kalani, Steph Curry, and several Toronto
this is one of the many times I'm glad I don't have a nose that works, because I don't even want to even know what this smells like. Does it smell like the Toronto Raptors players? Does it smell like lost hopes and dreams? Does it smell like blackface?
Toronto Raptors players were randomly gifted some of Mr. Blackface's scented candles, and Kalani's response was okay with multiple whys, thank you, which is exactly how I'd respond to getting someone scented candle that smells like them. I mean, you're lucky, you have like literally no sense of smell.
Yeah, I'm very lucky.
Traumatic injury from your childhood, but like there's really, I only imagine that Drake I literally only imagine that Drake Sorry, I read a sentence that says, in addition to Drake's Carby Musk, there are four other essences. Sweeter Tings, Williamsburg Sleepover, Good Thoughts, and Muskoka. $48 each, or the personal aroma, Drake's personal aroma, $80. So maybe you don't
want to... It's not even worth my time to like yell about this. It's just of how ridiculous it is.
Well, let's just move on and stop talking about celebrities who are launching scents.
And we're moving on to Travis Scott launching scents.
Travis Scott is launching a fragrance. And we're recording
this is what we do.
Travis Scott is definitely going the Soulja Boy route here because he's going to launch a new fragrance. He's apparently got a hard seltzer and apparently a PlayStation game. This is an addition to the Travis meal and the Fortnite.
So Travis Scott by Kyle Kalinske confirmed.
Basically. oh my god. Swedish company Byredo is working on a limited edition range of colognes and candles. There's the Travex Space Range pack with a $285 pack of things.
Holy fucking shit.
Including notes of cosmic dust, starlight, and atmospheric vapor, which, remind me, you can't smell in space.
Space is a vacuum.
Yeah, so, anywho's, I mean, like, good for him. He's making a shit ton of money off of these things, so there's that. But, yeah, there's a PlayStation.
I mean, he like, already was in a Happy Meal and shit, here. So, like, there's so much he's doing.
Yeah. Businessman. Very busy. Work on the music, please. Speaking of businessman, I'm gonna try to keep it chill here, but, Jay-Z is known for launching a lot of higher class like products in general, like wines and beverages
and NFL stuff.
Yes, streaming services.
failed streaming services.
Failed premium streaming services. But now he is launching Monogram, which is his premium cannabis line. And I'm gonna do some like quick maths for you very quickly, Sean, because you're not a stoner.
Nope.
Let me read very quickly. So, Monogram's core collection rolled out, retailing between $40 and $70. These products include several cannabis strains designated as light, medium, and heavy, available in pre-rolled cigars and joints.
That sounds expensive.
Sure, but like, for example, there's the OG hand roll that Jay-Z is offering. He said it's going to be like a pre-roll that you can smoke in multiple sessions like a cigar.
Okay.
I'm looking at the size of that. It's supposed to be $50 based on Jay-Z's. You can definitely get that from like any, like I will definitely get you any deal for like any head shop with that for $3. $3 for that size and that amount.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a ride. Again, like Jay-Z's done a good job of like selling normal price shit at a high like price because he puts his name on it. That's kind of branding. But This is gonna be a jump. Thankfully, the grass is not from New York, because that'd be terrible. It's grown in California. but yeah, that's there. That's the final story of Audio Face 2020.
Thank God the grass is growing in California. Code of the year. Oh, God. All right. And
this is the fourth annual Audio Face Core Packing episode.
We're jumping it.
Yeah, this is episode 169, which gives me the unfortunate realization that you'll be hosting the Audio Face Awards. But actually, you've hosted most of the Audio Face Awards episodes, so that's fine.
I also hosted the 50s of the 10s. We went back and forth on 50 to 10.
And also literally all the Audio Face Awards episodes have been even. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, should be fun.
Don't fuck it up.
We have some court packing to do here every year.
Yep.
Of course, we kind of mentioned this at the top of the show. Every year, we have albums that we couldn't get to throughout the year because we listen to a lot of music and there's only so much we can do. Albums, EPs, whatever came out. And so we want to acknowledge artists, but we're not going to do something where we bring up something that no one's ever heard about in the award show because that's some Grammy shit.
Exactly. So,
this is the last chance. These last 20 minutes or so is when we're going to do all the court packing of the albums we didn't talk about. And usually, like, this is when I'll do, like, a little bit of, like, just make it look different so it doesn't look like you copied, kind of looking at some of the other websites with their, like, album lists. And we reviewed most of the things that, like, made it on, like, the top 25, 50 albums list, so we don't have to re-mention them here. A lot of them are good, a lot of them are not, but we have award shows for that. But these are just things that we totally did not mention for whatever reason.
And which we didn't have time or wasn't an issue. There's a lot of other things. Because there's sometimes I have things I'm like, Dan, I really want to talk about this. We just don't have time. Okay, I'll put it in court packing.
Yeah. For example, we have Bad Bunny's YHLQMDLG, which stands for Yo Hago Lo Que Me De La Gana, which in great Spanish, I do whatever I want.
Yeah.
It was a Bad Bunny album that was released on my birthday this year, so I was extremely busy, and my birthday is also like a very busy time for music and generally every single year. So
February, beginning of March is always big time music releases.
And we tried
and
to
that's, and I think that's like The Weeknd came out, I believe, that time, and a bunch of others came out that time, so there's a lot.
We've tried to do a better job, and we'll continue to do a better job of broadening our reach of what songs we review and what like artists we review on Audio Face to make sure we're definitely covering more of like the broadly speaking Latin world of music. I know we did a lot of J Balvin this year, but this is definitely something I missed. And there's
another album this year. Because the thing too with Bad Bunny is he releases a lot of music.
Yeah, he released an album earlier this year. It's more like an EP, and it's not that great because it's like a compilation album. And again, like it's the same thing. And like it transcends languages. Mm-hmm. You can only make a certain amount of albums at a certain period of time without like some quality being dipped. But I think of the two that came out this year, the one from earlier this year is a lot better. You get like a reggaeton general thing, like Puerto Rico, a lot of those sort of like styles and vibes in that. But you are also getting a lot of like dipping into trap, dipping into R&B. A lot of not exactly the same levels of experimentation Kid Cudi did, but like you came from the album going, wow, he's actually going for like a couple different genres here and pushing this like reggaeton trap thing in a lot of different interesting ways. So I was definitely really impressed by that. Shout out to friend of the show, Anna, for bringing that up.
Well, I know there's a song he did, let me look for it right now, that he did with, there's probably a couple he did this year, but there was one with Daddy Yankee that I know that I've heard a bit and stuff around, on like reggaeton playlists and other stuff, around in the Spanish cultures, because we are cultured here on Audio Face. La Santa, there we go. With, Bad Bunny, Daddy Yankee, that was on that album that I did hear a bit this year.
Yeah, damn right. But yeah, it's all a really good album. If I had to pick like something I liked off of there, and there's a lot. Ignorantes was a really popular song on there, but I think my favorite's actually in the beginning, La Difícil.
Okay.
Just, it brings you into the style pretty easily. And yeah, he's just got a really good flow that even if you're not like a fluent Spanish speaker and I get like 60 to 70% of what's said in any of these given songs, it's a really nice, like interesting thing that you don't often get in the traditional albums that we would review of a similar genre. So it's nice, and shout out to Bad Bunny for like putting in some actual like really good work over these past couple of months with this album. Like I said, I heard the compilation album, not as good. Maybe take a chill with it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But this was definitely good. Sean, awesome. Your turn.
So my first is an album that literally just came out, but we didn't, or an EP that came out that we just weren't able to talk about. It is Foster the People. They released In the Darkest of Nights, Let the Birds Sing. It's an EP that came out of this recording about 3 days ago.
It so features Lambswool, which I'll let you continue, but yeah.
Yeah, it does.
It's 6 songs, 24 minutes long.
Yeah, and so you know my thing with Foster People, right?
For folks at home who aren't keeping score.
Who aren't keeping score, who aren't old audio face, that's maybe a new audio face. Listeners, welcome to our glorious podcast, All for the People, by the People.
Rate us 5 stars on iTunes.
Please. And Spotify. And tell Daniel Ek to eat a dick. Anyways,
the reason, the thing you have with Foster the People is complicated.
Yeah, I really enjoy their early stuff. Their last album, Sacred Hearts Club, that came in 2017, was the original sellout of all of the indie bands, where a lot of them tried this trap sound and it just leaked into a lot of stuff. Doing It for the Money was a song that, like, it just spread like wildfire to a bunch of alternative rock bands, a lot of indie bands that I enjoyed, and then the quality of Indian stuff went to shit for a couple of years, I feel like, after that. And
with a lot of retrospect, it's like Foster the People went from this really cool, like, subversive band doing songs like Pumped Up Kicks to like trying to imitate Maroon 5.
Pretty much. And it was horrible. But this EP is a return to form. Every song in here, fantastic. Really, really good. I like Walk With a Big Stick. It starts out, it almost has like a Beach Boys meets disco theme. Like, it's a really weird thing to explain, but the way they layer their voices and everything is a fantastic little song that gets you into it. It does feature Lambswool, which I really enjoy too.
Yeah, we did talk about it as a single, and it was pretty incredible.
And I was like, holy crap, they're getting back. Let me see if they do anything other stuff. And this whole EP is such a return to form for Foster the People. Like, this gives me hope that, granted, this year to me feels like the year of indie music, where it's been lackluster for a long time, and there's been so much out this year where just like, oh my god, like, I can't absorb everything.
Not to toot our own horn, but to exactly toot our own horn. We mentioned that rock music, part of its like quote-unquote death in like the late 10s, is the fact that there's a lot of room in indie to take that and run with it and make a lot of wild things. Mm-hmm. We saw Foster the People, like, just with this, start to grow from what they were, but to an extent they were almost part of the problem.
They were a big part of the problem, but they resolved their issues and made a very good EP where it's like, wow, like, you totally did a complete, you did a 180 and then you reverted the 180 and did a 360 and made it better. Like, it's just, it's something you never see in music. It's incredibly rare where you have someone who, a prominent band, make something that is shit, deviate away from it, but then return back to what their old sound was, but still push it forward enough to make it good.
We call that the Coldplay.
They did Coldplay better than Coldplay did Coldplay. Fantastic album.
It's kind of EP.
It's really good.
Yeah. Court packed it is. Dernard Bernard, a really sort of interesting artist. I kind of first sort of heard of his song on Free Fall, the K Tronada album. I'm sorry, the song was called Free Fall from K Tronada's recent album, Bubba, that is super plastered into the Audio Face Awards this year. Even though it came out in late 2019, it was after our court pack episode.
Yeah, so exactly.
It was
Stormzy's was late December, how we did I Am Greater Than I Was for last year's, even though it came out 2 years ago. Like, it's just how it works.
People may not know this from the singles rule, but we actually do have rules that we keep on Audio Face.
Yes.
But that is to say, like, he's got a really interesting sort of sound and what, like, he's going for. It's trapping being like a thing you'd be kind of familiar with, but there's still this, like, sort of growing from it. It almost sounds like, I remember describing a while ago, there's like futuristic, almost like robotic warehouse like pop or like R&B almost, where the percussion noises are very muted and echoey, and you feel like you're almost in like a futuristic just like lobby or a warehouse somewhere, but it's just like really nice sounds. Stuck featuring Ari Lennox, who I also really love, was on there and exemplifies that sound really nicely. Yeah, there's just a lot of, all my court backing picks just tend to be things that are, I didn't get to for the summer for whatever reason, but they're kind of slower, got a really nice soul thing, and pack a lot of depth that I wouldn't have expected from the album. Both of them have incredible voices, just can't be said enough. Definitely check out Stuck from the album Der And.
that's one way to say it, yeah. My next one, you have The Japanese House with Chewin' Cotton Wall EP. We have talked about her extensively on this podcast, one of my favorite indie artists out of England. We did talk about her album last year, Good of Falling, which I like. There is still some themes in there that I wanted her to improve upon and like push some stuff forward and whatnot. But the Chewin' Cotton Wall EP is, there's a lot of good stuff in here. It's only four songs long. It has one of my favorite indie songs of the entire year, which is Something Has to Change. That track, it is one of my favorite tracks that she's done, and it's really showing like the evolution of her as an artist, and it's really, she's starting to really land on her feet with everything that she's made over the past 5-6 years of her career, and it's making me look forward to more of her stuff. You also have Dionne featuring Justin Vernon, who had a Bon Iver, and that's a good little like experimentalness for her, because usually her stuff is really quiet and like kind of laid back and stuff, but with Donny it's more of like experimenting out and doing a little bit more of like those drum beats that was like industrial drum beats and stuff. So it's a sound that from her that I haven't really heard before too much, and it's cool to see her branching out a little bit more. Then you have Chewin' Cotton Wool, which is like a slow kind of just your typical the Japanese house where it's like slower, her vocals really pronounced and really low pitch because that's their vocal range tends to be, and then Sharing Bed, which is the opening track, is again kind of like slower thing into it, getting into Something Has to Change. But for a short little EP with her, it was something that like I didn't want to talk about too much or whatnot on the podcast, because at that time when it came out in August, we had so much crap out in August. It just got over there because we had a lot of singles and other stuff. But I have listened to Something Has to Change a shit ton this year. So it's something that I wanted to bring up this year. She's a fantastic artist, so really like her stuff.
My last one, typical Audio Face fashion coming in like literally last minute.
Last second.
Because it came to my head as you were talking, and I was like, okay, Sean, you're doing great. Keep vamping. Let me figure this out. This is Whipped Cream with her album, Who is Whipped Cream? I'd basically say she is like Rez on the Rising. A younger version, kind of more likely to collaborate with rappers and more of like a Rico Nasty kind of way, where it's a little bit kind of wild in that sense.
What's the album?
Whipped Cream. And yeah. Sometimes it gets really trappy depending on the artist. Like there's Do I with Mulatto and Baby Goth. But sometimes it gets like downright Rez like.
I like opening track Us. This goes hard.
Yeah. The Told Ya, which is kind of in the bottom. Yeah. Hey. Yeah, Mr. Yeah, I told you so. Took too many my overdose. Yeah, told you so. Why you gotta be so emotional? Yeah. Oh Lord, the kid did it again. Yo shows be looking little as shit. Oh boy, they call me sinning again. Oh boy, they call me sinning again. Yeah. Lil Xan. Yeah, with Lil Xan. it's weird because it's kind of trappy, but during the middle parts, it sounds like almost like a Rez-produced song. It's very interesting. And I don't know if, again, like, this is the, I don't know if I'll give this, like, album of the year, but for, what is my Dictator Dan's?
Dictator Dan's picks,
honorable
yes.
mentions. Honorable this is definitely mentions, something yes. I want to mention here because, I mean, something we talked about slightly is just, like, female DJs have it a little bit kind of rough around.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're doing a lot of creative shit that doesn't always get highlighted as much. So, Whipped Cream is pretty sick. I also just got to generally check out Ari Lennox more broadly because I keep running into stuff that Ari Lennox is featured on. But, like, to listen completely is something I need to do. Plus, looks like there needs to be a new album coming out soon. Mm-hmm. I'll be looking forward to that. But that brings us to the last thing we'll be court packing.
Which is one of my favorite electronic music makers, Kolsch. He is a Danish producer that is on, I believe he's on Deadmau5's label, I'd like to say. We did talk about his, one of his trilogy albums, 1989 and 2017. And this was his first proper release, because you had one of his other things that's just a bunch of demos. But this is his first proper release since 1989. And I had some issues with 1989, like I talked about it, because 1977 was one of my, is still one of my favorite electronic albums of all time ever made. And his album, Nowhere, Now Here Nowhere, which is really hard for me to say, because it's trippy, yeah, is one of my favorite electronic albums of the entire year. And that's saying something, there's been a lot of good stuff out there. It's an album that came out in September, and I've been wanting to talk about it and stuff, but you know, late September to now, it's just literally we've had no time. Everything yeah. else has been basically booked up already. So I never got to talk about it. Top to bottom, it is fantastic. Great Escape starts off the album, like, with this beautiful, like, beautiful beat in the background, like, similar to 1977 in a way, but still pushing a little bit more forward. Because the stuff with Kolsch, a lot, like, there are songs to me that can be filler and stuff within his work. There is no filler in this entire album. Every little song fits together. Every song is about, like, 3 to 4 minutes long, and all of it is a banger, basically. It's just really good club mixes, a lot of good garage, a lot of good house, a lot of good stuff that's, like, Deadmau5 sound in a bit. It's crisp, it's clean, and this is, to me, the best album he's done in his career so far. Every little bit of it is really, really good. After Great Escape, you have Shoulder of the Giants, which is really one of my favorites on here. Going back down, you have Sleeper Must Awaken, which almost sounds like Blue Screen of Death sound, where it's like this little beat in the background and stuff, really fast drums, really fast cymbals going on in the background. But yeah, I really enjoy this. Going down a little bit further, we have Traumfabrik, which means dream fabric, for those of you who don't speak German, which he does a lot of German song titles, even though it's Danish. So I don't know if why he does that, but
I always
appreciate it. But overall, it's a very outstanding electronic album. It's something that I've been listening to since it's come out, like on repeat. I've put it on a couple of my EDM playlists and stuff. And you know me, as someone who's extremely picky with my electronic music, it just ticks all the boxes for me. It's really hard for me to find an EDM album that sounds almost like a DJ mix without being basically a straight copy of something, and then without also being a lot of filler. But
yeah, fantastic, super rare,
very, very good album.
I'm definitely gonna check that out. I'm always looking for good electronic music like that.
And yeah, it's an hour and 12 songs long, so it's not overly overtly long either, yeah, which is good.
And it's gonna be a very competitive year for electronic. That's
it,
for sure.
It is 100%.
That's it.
That's it.
That's all. That's the year.
That's it, folks.
That's the year of Audio Face that we have just done. We'll have the Audio Face Awards. It's looking like it'll come probably Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, around that kind of vibe.
We'll give you a Christmas present, you know, just picking a little Audio Face for y'all. You know, when, since, you know, you can't visit family and have that one racist uncle go mental on you, and you could just escape to your room after your Christmas presents or whatever those things you celebrate, and then
get
put on
two
some
and a half
face,
hours of whatever the hell Audio Face Awards is going to be. But yeah, this is the last episode of the year in that sort of context. So we will be returning with regular episodes next year, probably in mid-January. And that will be just a general thing. Maybe if I'm feeling nice and I have some free time, I'm not going to promise it, I'll drop some bonus episodes of Audio Face. Of just some like best of clips that we've done throughout the years. And we have so many different bonus episodes. Last year, during the break, we did 50 of the 10s, our best album rankings of that. So there's plenty of Audio Face to go and check back on if you haven't kept up with us every single week. But until about a week and a half from now, in the Audio Face Awards, this is goodbye. Sean can be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez. Mm-hmm. I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web, on Twitch at twitch.tv/Dan from the Web, on Instagram at Dan from the Internet, and at YouTube, youtube.com/Dan from the Internet. The entire show can be found at Audio Face Pod. Make sure you're locked there, especially youtube.audioface.show, where we will put as much as YouTube allows us to of the award show up for y'all. It should be exciting. We're looking forward to putting it together. We've got a lot of music to listen to, but it's good music, so there are worse things to do on this podcast.
Oh, for sure.
Thank you all for listening to this long boy, and we will talk to you in a week and a half or so. Cheers.
Bye.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, hologram back.